Hey, Real Ghost Stories Online family. It's Sunday, and we're going to start doing something interesting over here at Real Ghost Stories Online, calling it True Crime Sunday, where we'll play one of three brand new episodes of our other podcast, Dark Side Of. It's a true crime podcast. So if you love those dark stories and following true crime, you need to subscribe to Dark Side Of. Myself, Carol Hughes, and Stacey Cole, all hosted every single week with new episodes every Monday, Tuesday, and Friday. Search Dark Side Of wherever you download podcasts. But right now, enjoy one of three brand new episodes of Dark Side Of from this week. Today on The Dark Side Of, Anna Sorkin's father reveals exactly what makes Anna, Anna, and talks about the monster he created. Sonny Belwani, ex-boyfriend of Elizabeth Holmes and former Theranos exec, begins his fraud trial, and a woman turns self in after allegedly shoving Broadway vocal coach to the ground in New York City, leading to her death. Those stories and more today on The Dark Side Of.
Sometimes the human mind goes to dark places. Sometimes those dark delusions turn into a reality. A reality so shaded and gray, once all is said and done, the healthy mind is drawn into the documented retelling of these tragic events, trying to find logic, reason, and understanding where there may be none at all. This is The Dark Side Of.
That indeed it is. Welcome to the program. If you like the show, be sure to check out our Patreon page. Just search Dark Side Ever. Go to darksidepod.com and press subscribe wherever you download a podcast so you don't miss any episodes of our program. It's Tony and Carol with you on today's episode of the show. What is going on?
Well, I want to hear this Anna Delphi story because I started watching some documentary on YouTube, some British thing. And once I'm kind of like seeing her with these other people and pictures of her and not from the Netflix movie, maybe she was super, you know how some people have it and you're just kind of drawn to them. Maybe that was it. But she just looked kind of, I don't know that I would have picked her out of a crowd and thought, oh my gosh, that woman's got it going on.
Yeah.
You know, it's just interesting to me that she was able to get away with so much at such a young age and was kind of, you know, sometimes I think like a Kim Kardashian walks in the room. It's like, oh my God, she's beautiful. And this girl's okay.
Yeah.
I guess it goes to show you that plain girls can scam really rich people too.
I think it really comes down to, I mean, sometimes just how compelling you can be and how persuasive you can be. And apparently she was quite persuasive to get away with every single thing that she got away with, you know?
It's fascinating to me.
No, it is. It is.
I just find it fascinating.
It's interesting to hear this perspective from the dad. This is coming to us from the Daily Mail. It says, exclusive, I'd rather be in jail than live with my parents. Bank heiress Anna Sorkin blasts her father after he tells how he indulged her with dance tutors, and designer clothes, and still gives her money despite her never once saying she loves him. Vladim sat down for an exclusive interview with DailyMail.com in which he said his daughter's spending is out of control even in detention. Sorkin, 58, shared pictures of his daughter from when he was growing up in Russia and Germany. Well, the fake heiress Sorkin has blasted back at her parents after her father said all these things and that he would welcome her in Germany. She said, I'd rather be in jail than live with my parents, she wrote in a text to DailyMail.com reporters. She did not elaborate further. Earlier Monday, the Daily Mail published an exclusive interview with Sorkin's father, Vladim Sorkin. He told how his daughter has never once said she loves him, yet demands money from him nearly every day. He told how he built up his business from scratch to help give his daughter a head start in life. Anna, 31, is now languishing behind bars in a U.S. immigration center awaiting deportation back to Germany, having swindled hundreds of thousands of dollars by pretending to be the heir to a $60 million fortune. Her story, of course, told in Netflix series Inventing Anna, starring Julia Garner, which reveals how the 31-year-old passed herself as Anna Delvey, the daughter of an oil tycoon who conned the super rich of New York and persuaded banks to lend her mountains of cash. In real life, her father is a humble man originally from Moscow who moved to the small town in Germany with his wife Anna to forge a better life. Father of two, Vladim, 58, said, "I speak to Anna 3-4 times a week from the immigration center in New York, and the conversation is always the same. She needs money. She's paying people to run around for her in jail, to clean her clothes for her. She has an ability to wrap people around her little finger. I've sent her thousands of dollars in the past. At the moment, because she is in detention and amounts are small, but even in there, she hasn't learned how to control her finances. I don't think she's ever once said that she loves me, but would tell me instead, 'I'm your only daughter and you have to help me and give me money. I've no way of doing it myself.' But she did find a way, a dishonest and shameful way, and it's landed her in prison and now in an immigration center awaiting deportation. Where will she go if she's kicked out of America? We'll have room for her here in the family home, and while we support her, we don't enable her to repeat her previous mistakes." I think that's kind of bullshit, because all you were doing is enabling her to do her previous mistakes by giving her all the money in prison. "Regardless of what happened, you can always make good out of something bad," added Vladim. "Every day is a new beginning. I don't think she's evil inside, but she needs for the first time to figure out what she's going to do with her life." Last week, Anna gave Daily Mail TV an exclusive jailhouse interview in which she finally expressed remorse for her scams. "No money in the world is worth going to jail, even for a day," she warned. "I'm just trying to make the best out of the situation I'm dealing with right now. I could have done so many things differently, and I would have never seen the inside of a jail cell, but this is what it is." And I was born January 23rd, 1991, in Doma Davidedo, a working-class suburb of the south of Moscow, where Vladim worked as a truck driver and his wife owned a small convenience store. When she was roughly age 16 in 07, the family moved to Eschleyer, a small industrial town roughly 30 miles west of Cologne. Vladim became an executive at a transport company before starting his own company, specializing in heating, ventilation, and air conditioning systems. He used his newfound wealth to buy his daughter private tutors in German, English, and French, even dancing. And he and his wife often drove for miles to pick up designer clothes and shoes for their daughter, much of which would stay in the wardrobe unworn. To escape the humdrum of Eschweiler, Anna moved briefly to London in June of 2011 to attend Central St. Martin's, a prestigious art school, but soon dropped out and returned to Germany. The following year, she briefly worked at a PR firm in Berlin before relocating to Paris, where she had a $400 a month internship at a French fashion magazine. Her parents subsidized her rent and even gave her a car. Smiling but shaking his head, Vladim, who also has a son, said, "Anna's always had expensive tastes, but I don't know where she gets it from. We tried to accommodate her when we were in Russia, but it was difficult. When we came to Germany, those sorts of clothes were more available, but we still had to travel quite far out of Eschweiler to buy them for her. I remember she had a prom after finishing her exams in school, and she went to it in these expensive high heels, the only girl to do so. Some clothes she wouldn't even wear. Most people in the area are not really fashion conscious, and I didn't have the same taste for luxury as Anna, which is why she went to London, then Berlin, and then to Paris. She felt the town wasn't quite good enough for her. She wanted to live like Paris Hilton, but we weren't able to give her that. In 2013, with the lure of Europe's great capital cities not enough, Anna instead set her sights on New York, where she maneuvered her way into the Big Apple's elite social circles, passing herself off as a German-born socialite, Anna Delvey, who had $67 million in fortune overseas. And I think we know the rest from there of what Anna was able to get herself into. So, yeah, they kind of created this monster.
You know, I think someone like her, it's so extreme that I don't know if you could have created that monster necessarily, that maybe there was some issues with her anyway.
Yeah.
Like maybe lacking empathy or compassion or, you know, self-control. But because, you know, and two, I think a lot of times, you know, these young girls see like a Paris Hilton. It's like, oh, I want to be like her. And it doesn't matter that they don't have the means to be like her.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe that was kind of it. Maybe it just makes me think, like, because not only was she, you know, lying to people all the time, she treated people like shit on top of it.
Yeah.
You know, she was very condescending and, oh, you're so basic and, you know, just how pathetic people are who don't have money.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this very entitled thing. And I'm assuming that's all part of the act. But that would be hard to pull off, I would think.
You would think, unless you like believe it. And she seems to like believe it. That's the thing. It's like it's not an act to her. It almost seems like this is really who she is. She's just a horrible human being when it comes down to it.
It kind of seems like that.
Yeah.
Because I just have the feeling that now she's saying what she needs to say about, oh, I would have never done this. Jail is so horrible. Because, yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm.
But once you get out, would you do it again? Would you find another scheme, something else? Like, could you play off your notoriety now and make some money? You know, I'm assuming there are people who would love to have Anna Delphi at their party.
Yeah.
I think it's strange.
I think she's going to find, I mean, the fucked up part is she's going to walk away. She's going to make a ton of money off of this. And she will get some money. And I wonder how quickly she will go through it, though, when it's her own. Because that's an interesting thing about money. When it's not yours and you're spending it, you can go through it very, very fast. When it's yours and you actually made it in a reputable way, not like I ripped everybody off and now I'm going to profit off of a book in one quick fail swoop or something. That's a little different. And I mean, that's where you see a lot of times where people that have never had anything like that, it's like, boom, look, a windfall, especially like professional sports. And nobody knows how to handle it. I don't think this woman has a clue how to handle it.
Well, and she had a good scam going. So she was really good at that, at scamming people. So she would just have to find another person or hotel or restaurant to scam. And like, what? You know, she would get so indignant about like, how dare you question me?
Yeah.
And not having this credit card. There's obviously something wrong with it. Why don't you believe me? Like, I couldn't imagine going to a freaking Motel 6 and they say, Carol, your card's declined. And I'm like, what? How dare you not believe me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Motel 6 people, get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
But somehow, I just can't believe that there was actual high-end hotels that were letting her stay there.
We'll figure it out, Miss Delphi. Yeah. I mean, and then this probably doesn't happen to them that much. Where someone's trying to pull that on a location like that.
Correct.
You probably get it a lot more at the Motel 6. And then people, you know, it's like a dine and dash thing. Like, you're going to have that at, you know, diners and things a lot more than you're going to necessarily at a super high-end restaurant. So they, you know, they're kind of curbing their bet going, she likely has money. We don't want to upset her. You know, worst case scenario, we lose it on the room. And they end up losing out on the room. You know? I don't think this is the end of her, though. I think she's going to go back over there.
I think that there's another scam or another.
There's going to be a murder at some point. This is going to be like, you know, Robert Durst, where it starts out like, oh, my God, these horrible things that she did. And then she disappears off the radar. And then a couple years later, like she's tied to some mysterious death. And it's like, and it sounds totally something like she would do. And then it was going to be like, oh, why didn't we stop her in the first time? You know? People like, this is someone who is dangerous. She's not, this isn't going to end well. She's a loose cannon. She's going to end up killing herself or others in the process.
Yeah, because she's not someone who's going to go, you know what, I'll go live with my mom and dad and save up some money for a while.
No.
And I'll get me a modest little apartment and work wherever I have to.
This is going to get much more fucked up in the coming weeks, months, years. That'll be a fun one to watch. It'll be a sequel to the movie.
We'll be talking about her for 3 years from now.
Guaranteed. I can go back to the audio and I can say, see, I told you she'd kill somebody. Let's go to our next story. Sonny Valwani, the ex-boyfriend of Elizabeth Holmes and former Theranos exec, has begun his fraud trial, finally. This is one we've been, of course, paying attention to for quite a while. Did you... Well, it's still going on. The series is still going on. Are you following it?
No.
No?
No, I have not watched
it. Okay.
But like I said before, I did the whole drop out the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't been, you know what? I bet they're doing updates on this trial on that one. I wonder. Maybe I should check into it.
Maybe. Yeah.
But if they found her guilty, I don't know how they don't find him guilty. However, she was the CEO of the company, and I think he was a COO mm-hmm. or CFO or something like that. I can't remember what he was exactly.
Yeah.
But she was his boss.
Technically,
You know, maybe his defense is, hey, I was just doing what the boss told me to do. But I don't think you could do that knowingly scamming people.
No, I think it's going to be revealed they both knew what was going on and both had the position to stop it from happening.
I have the feeling, though, he will not get as harsh a sentence as she did.
No?
I just think that.
Was there any sort of plea deal going on with him, or...
I don't think so.
She was kind of like almost trying to play that angle initially, wasn't she? With like, I was abused and this and that. And it's like, yeah, I kind of doubt it.
Yeah, she totally wanted it. Was her defense was he was abusive. He made me do it.
Yeah.
He was controlling me sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think anybody bought it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's interesting that it wasn't bought by anybody. Why did nobody buy it?
I think that, number one, she was his boss.
Yeah.
So you can't be like, the person who was underneath me was forcing my hand in all these decisions. Your name was the top.
Yeah.
So that's weird. And then there were several things that came out in the trial that, you know, other times where she definitely stood up to him without a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, if you could tell him that.
Yeah.
You know, why was in, and they read like lots of their text messages. And I mean, that could be a whole episode right there. You and I doing a reenactment of their text messages.
Can I be Elizabeth Holmes?
Oh, hell yeah.
Hi.
I don't know. But
hi, Sunny.
I
really I'm so glad you called.
Her voice. I worked on her voice really hard. So let me be her at least for one episode.
Okay. Okay. We can read it like. Read it like we did the ones between Mommy Doomsday.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll have to find
there's got to be a list of them somewhere.
That'd be funny. We'll have to find that. Well, the
her voice is like down there with mine.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Holmes.
You just have to keep it very
She's
level.
A little bit butch.
There's
She's
no,
but she talks way down there.
There's no effect. No affectation to the voice.
Not really.
Yeah.
And everything goes up at the end.
It does kind of.
But yeah, but they call each other not like a, I don't think it was lions, but there was some weird way they referred to themselves. And I don't know. It's just a little creepy to me.
Well, the trial of former Theranos executive Ramesh Sunny Balwani is scheduled to begin on Tuesday, a little more than 2 months after a federal jury convicted his ex-girlfriend, Theranos founder Elizabeth Holmes, of wire fraud and conspiracy to commit wire fraud. This story coming to us from People. Balwani's trial was previously set to commence on March 16th in California before U.S. District Judge Edward Delvia. However, COVID-19 scare last week delayed the start of the proceedings inside San Jose's Robert F. Peckham Federal Building. Balwani, a 56-year-old Pakistani businessman, has pled not guilty to 9 counts of wire fraud and 2 counts of conspiracy to commit wire fraud. Picking the jury of 6 men and 6 women for the trial proved more difficult than expected, as many of the jury pool admitted to having seen parts of The Dropout, Hulu's new miniseries starring Amanda Seyfried as Holmes and Naveen Andrews as Balwani. Holmes and Balwani first met in 2002 in Beijing, China, when she was 19 and he 37. They were living together by 2005. Authorities allege Holmes made false claims that Theranos technology could run hundreds of medical tests using only a few drops of patients' blood, attracting financial investments from retail giants Walgreens and Safeway. Theranos was once valued at about $9 billion, and Holmes was named one of Forbes' richest women in America, all with the help of Balwani, authorities have alleged. But in March of 2018, Holmes' elaborate ruse unraveled. She and Balwani were charged with massive fraud by the Securities and Exchange Commission, accused of raising more than $700 million from investors through an elaborate years-long fraud in which they exaggerated or made false statements about the company's technology, businesses, and financial performance. In June of 2018, criminal charges were filed against Holmes and Balwani, who for a time served as Theranos president. Belwani, who first joined Theranos in 2009, had been banned from owning or operating blood laboratories ever since an inspection of Theranos' Newark, California lab back in March of 2016. Belwani left the biotech company that same year in May. Like Holmes, who dropped out of Stanford University in 2004, Belwani also left Stanford without the computer science degree he'd been pursuing in 2008. There you go. Actress Jennifer Lawrence is set to portray... Oh, this is interesting. Actress Jennifer Lawrence is set to portray Holmes in Bad Blood, which is an upcoming Will Ferrell-produced biopic helmed by Adam McKay. The producers have yet to announce who will be playing Belwani in the film. So there's another one coming out.
That one, I would assume, is theatrical release?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to tell. I mean, yeah, I mean, honestly, today I don't know what's theatrical and what's not anymore.
I know, right? That would be so weird to have a movie made about you, especially when it's some shit that you really shouldn't have done.
Mm-hmm.
And they won't quit making movies.
Or it's still going on. Like, you're literally...
Oh, my God.
You're in court.
I effed up. I told the world that I had the Edison device that could diagnose all this shit with a single drop of blood. Won't anybody let it go?
I know.
You know, and it's just, like, that's a very different scenario than the Anna Delphi, because, you know, you're saying that you've created this device that's, you know, going to revolutionize the way we detect various illnesses.
Yeah.
And it's going to be so easy and so fast, and you can use it on the battlefield. Mm-hmm. And then you put together this all-star lineup board of directors of older white men and old white men, I should have said. And then you get millions of dollars from these major companies, and even say, like, I think it was Pfizer and a couple of those other big drug manufacturers, like, they were backing them, and they weren't backing them, but she said that.
Yeah.
And had it in print. You know, so it's like, that's fraud.
Mm-hmm.
And for billions of dollars. And the fact that she was worth, what did you say? It was like $9 billion or
yeah.
$8 billion or $12 billion or something?
Yeah, it was up there.
I don't know. Once it gets over $1 billion, it's like, it's just a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
But to be worth that kind of money at one point.
Yeah.
And none of that shit was true. And I think they just thought, oh, if we just buy enough time, we'll make it work.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go ahead and buy some other regular devices and say that our device is doing the blood work when actually we'll do it on their machines. And that's what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that was just fraud on so many levels.
It's just amazing how far this was able to go, and the people that were able to be swindled into it. And what it makes me wonder about is other things in history that maybe we didn't necessarily catch that things like this were going on, and we thought were so legit and strong and wonderful because so-and-so is behind it and this person is behind it. And maybe it didn't go down in flames quite the way this did, but you know, how much do these people's voices that we think, you know, lend so much credit and clout really mean when something like this seemed to happen so, so easily?
And we're in a day and age where, you know, it would be easier to track people. There's all forensic kind of things you could do. And, you know, back in the day, it was one guy's word against another guy's word.
Yeah.
You know, like in the 1800s, I couldn't prove that I didn't invent that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, so, I mean, the whole thing's been around forever, but I think that she's kind of, in a way, got that Anna Delphi thing going on because she was really young, and she is very smart. Like, that's one thing. Like, she's incredibly smart. So, you know, too bad she didn't use her powers for good. I think she thought she could, though. I think the whole idea of it was something she really did feel was attainable in the beginning. And I'm assuming she probably got caught up in the money and, you know, because she's flying on private jets all over the place and staying in really expensive hotels. And
I just typed in Theranos into eBay to see what I was wondering if you can buy one of the machines, you know, for, like people buy old Nintendos and things of that nature. There's none of those that I'm seeing, but you can get like a company jacket, a Theranos water bottle, a stock certificate.
Which is worth nothing, but at one time it was worth a lot.
It's worth nothing, but it's going for like $750 on eBay, just, and it's signed by Elizabeth Holmes. Yeah, so I mean, yeah, it's worth nothing now, but it's just, it's a piece of history of a legendary scam. What else? Yeah.
That's interesting.
Theranos coffee mugs. Theranos order acknowledgement for lab equipment. So just all sorts of random stuff that Theranos employee tags. Lots of stuff. So I guess if you worked there and you had some office swag, you could totally, you could make a couple bucks off of it right now.
Which they're probably all owed significant amount of money as employees. I'm going to guess some of their last paychecks didn't go through the bank.
You can buy realtimecures.com, which was Elizabeth Holmes' original name for Theranos, for $5,000. Let's see here.
That was a bad name.
Yeah. Ooh, a Theranos beach blanket. Who wants one of those? Go to the beach this summer and rock your Theranos beach blanket. It'd be kind of funny. Just like you have like a Theranos like t-shirt. You got a cap. You got that. Just see if anybody says anything to you. Just the reactions you might get. Let's go to our last story here. Woman turns
this
out.
This last story, let me interject, is all kinds of effed up.
Yeah.
This is an effed up story that makes no sense.
So.
And it's sad.
New York woman identified as Lauren Piesna of Port Jefferson, Long Island, has been arrested and charged with manslaughter following the death of Broadway singing coach Barbara Meyer Gersten last week, People confirms. On Tuesday, the 26-year-old turned herself into the New York City police after she allegedly shoved Gersten to the ground earlier this month in an unprovoked attack resulting in her death. Gersten was 87. The random assault was caught on camera, appearing to show Fienza and widely shared by New York NYPD Crime Stoppers following the tragedy. New York Times reported on March 10th that the vocal coach was pushed from behind in her neighborhood, causing her to hit her head and become unconscious. She entered a coma and died 5 days later. In a press conference held March 15th, NYPD Chief Detective James Essig said, "A short time ago, Gernstein died from her injuries. We're asking the public's help in solving this disgusting and disgraceful offense committed against a vulnerable elderly female who was doing nothing but walking down the streets of New York City," he added. Gernstein family also shared a heartbreaking news on Facebook as they mourned her death. "Today at 11:15 a.m., we have lost one of the brightest little flames to ever grace this world," they wrote. "I ask that you all give me a little time and space, but I want to make time for anyone and everyone who wants to know more about her final moments." Daily News reported that Gernstein's grandson, AJ, authored the post. Bob, I love you. You are always and will be in my heart," he continued. I love you all so much. I could not have made it through these past 5 days without all your love and support." The day prior, Gernstein's grandson wrote on her Facebook account, "She suffered traumatic damage to the left side of her brain and has been unconscious the entire time," adding it's a very serious injury. He later wrote, "I struggle to understand and cope with this world on a daily basis, and frankly, this is beyond my ability to bear." According to the Times, Gernstein was a noted member of the artistic community in New York, having worked with Broadway professionals and beyond. According to Playbill, Gernstein worked in the 2019 Broadway revival of Oklahoma that featured Tony Award winner Ali Stroker, and as well as the 2008 musical Passing Strange. So, this woman just goes up and pushes her and...
Apparently. And I don't even think they even know why. Like, I don't know if she was just in some big hurry and she was in her way. I don't know. But she pushed her and so she wasn't planning on causing her death, I'm sure. But she also didn't care that she was pushing an 80-something-year-old woman.
Yeah.
which is really cold.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the woman you would stop and help her. You know, it's like, I'm assuming she was probably still a very vibrant 80-something-year-old woman.
Yeah.
And
I mean, she was just working a couple years ago. So, yes, I mean, obviously a lot can change. But when you're 87, even if you're vibrant and working, you fucking get pushed from behind and hit your head. You're kind of fucked at that point.
And I mean, and it can happen to anybody. If you fell back and hit your head, like, just, I don't, and then it went, what? Like, the girl looks totally not like some drugged out.
No.
Like, she just looks like a college kid.
I know. It's fucked up.
I don't get it.
I don't know. I do not know anymore.
I'm glad she turned herself in, though.
Yeah, I am too. It's just, what the fuck? What's your reason? I mean, okay, you did this. That's great. Why did you do it? I don't know.
My guess is she was in some hurry. She was in, that lady was in her way. She pushed her to get out of the way because she's super important.
Yum.
Hell, we all coming home from work at night. Every one of us runs or drives past a car like that. Like,
yeah.
Everybody get out of my way. I'm really important and I have to go much faster and cut through all the lanes.
Does our I know we're not out of COVID yet. But you know, since there's a war going on, it's magically disappeared, it seems, from the conversation. Which I'm cool with right now because I'm sick of it. but in this now, I'll call it post-COVID world, while knocking on wood and knowing that damn well that's not truly what it is. Where do you think we are? Did we come out of this thing with everyone feeling better about each other and people working harder and things are gonna?
I don't think so. I think it came. We came out of it very divided.
Yeah.
And people are just uglier and meaner.
I agree.
I think there's a combination of the COVID and Donald Trump thing.
Yeah.
Now, I don't want to get into politics about if you like Donald Trump or not, but I think it opened up this, this for people to have very loud voices.
Yeah.
And there hasn't been any compromise, you know, because can't we agree there's at least a pandemic? It doesn't even seem like we could agree on that.
Yeah.
And so it just seems like the world got more divided and uglier.
And you know what also got uglier? Public restrooms. I this is the one thing I will say that I miss about COVID. Public restrooms. Because during COVID, if you went to a public restroom, it was clean as fuck. It was wonderful. All the toilets were flushed. There was toilet paper. There was Lysol. There was shit everywhere to clean the fuck out of that bathroom. It was already clean. You smelled it going and you're like, yes, everything is dead in here. I'll probably get some sort of rash from the bleach on my ass just for sitting on this toilet. I'm fucking clean. At least it's a bleach rash and not COVID. But now I swear to God, I've noticed this, like since everybody's, you know, the mask thing's calmed down over the last month or two, you know, to like all across the board for the most part, it's like restrooms are fucking dirty again. I went into Target the other. Target's usually like a really good one at keeping the restrooms up. Every fucking stall. And it was a nice Target in a nice neighborhood. It was a high end Target neighborhood. And I was like, holy shit, this is like when I would find it a real crappy Target, and it was gross. And then I noticed it like at some of the, I mean, gas stations, you normally get that, but some of these nicer ones that I go to, they're usually pretty kept up. Not so much anymore. It's like once we started like, okay, masks are off. I don't know what happened at workplaces or like retail, but I think something said we can stop cleaning the bathrooms.
Yeah, we have been spending way too much money.
It's like everybody just gave up
on hygiene.
Like we've done it like 10 times the amount we should have over the last 2 years. So we're not going to clean them now for the next 2 years to make up for it. Everyone can just, you know, fucking bring all the Lysol in from their home and we can use it up that way. Clean it. Bring your own. I don't know. I've noticed that. Have you noticed that at all? Maybe
no.
Men's are a little grosser than women's, though.
But it's not like I don't think I've used a lot of public restrooms lately.
Yeah.
So no, I haven't noticed that, but you know what? Now I will.
I make a point.
Go into.
I make a point.
Like, Tony was right.
Every day when I'm driving somewhere, I'm like, I'm going to stop there and try their restroom just for the hell of it. I do. It can be like a vet office, a dentist. Sometimes it's like a Jiffy Lube or a Dairy Queen. Basically, I have a little map and I try to exit out. I play restroom bingo on the map. And if I can get a blackout, then I win a prize.
The Jiffy Lube seems like a real coin toss. No, it doesn't. It just seems like those are the people who are like, really, I am not cleaning the bathroom.
During COVID?
You pay me to clean the bathroom.
During COVID, you could eat a gourmet dinner off of the toilet seat and feel good about it. I did it once. I was like, I need my tires changed. Did it. And then I went and I had filet and I had it right on the seat of the Jiffy Lube toilet. I cooked it right there. I'm like, this is how clean this shit is. Watch this. And I was like, I ain't getting COVID. I'm enjoying this delicious. And I even lit a candle in the Jiffy Lube bathroom. It was kind of a little romantic moment. I kind of meditated for a few minutes. I had that steak and I flushed and then I went out my way. I'm like, damn, that was a clean Jiffy Lube toilet. Now, like, now you're going to get all sorts of shit. You'll get crabs from that steak and get a surf and turf.
Oh, yeah. You would.
You would. You could actually say you got the STD from the Jiffy Lube toilet now, and it'd be true. It would be true. Like, you didn't get it from that toilet. No, it was the Jiffy Lube. Oh, shit, it was. No, really, baby. It was the Jiffy Lube toilet. Shit, it was the Jiffy Lube toilet. But I got the high dollar oil change, so we don't have to fill it for 8,000 miles.
And of course, I got the air filter. They said I needed one.
And the windshield wiper fluid has been changed, and the blinker fluid as well. And I'm sorry, baby, that I gave you that STD from the Jiffy Lube toilet. Baby, come back. I just want you to come back. I'm down on my knees, begging you, please. It was, Jiffy Lube toilet.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. That was actually the original lyrics to On Bended Knee from Boys to Men. Because it was originally about a man that got a STD from a Jiffy Lube toilet. They just thought it wasn't relatable enough, so they kind of changed the lyrics to make it more mainstream.
I never know what the hell is going to come out of your mouth.
They do perform the original when they do their Las Vegas show, which is really kind of cool. They roll out like a big Jiffy Lube set in the background.
And I bet they do.
And they act it out too. Like Wanya goes into the thing and he walks out and he's like, oh, no, no, no. I got crabs from the Jiffy Lube toilet. I'm down on my knees begging you, can we go back to before I got my oil changed? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, there's just so many people who can listen to this show and they can like believe a lot of random shit if they listen to you.
They can, and they'll be better off for it. Because my world is much more joyous than the real one. Boys to Men got STDs from the Jiffy Lube toilet. Fuck, that was a great song. I wish I would have known that back in the day. Yeah, just wait till you hear other songs.
Look what came out of Getting STD, that amazing song.
Fucking amazing. Big hit. Big hit. Wait till you hear the Bodyguard soundtrack outwritten. That'll be in next week's episode. All right, that's going to, I don't know where I would go with that, but I'm sure I could go somewhere.
You got a week to think about it.
I got a full week to ponder that one. That's going to wrap up today's episode of The Dark Side Of. If you like the show and you want to, you know, support us, keep us on the air, become a Dark Sider, get advanced episodes of the show in the full archive, and it's all commercial free. Go to darksidepod.com or search us on Patreon, Dark Side Of, and subscribe. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're listening right now so you don't miss any of our free episodes. New ones every Monday, Tuesday, and Friday of the week. Until next time, for Carol and all of us at Dark Side Of, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.